D3. Number 4B.
And so, principle is its own infinite love. Its own love. What a beauty. What a beauty. There's no question here, do you love or don't you love? Do you love God? Do you love your neighbor? Do you love your enemies? Does love God? Does God love you? Nothing of that sort. Here we consider the infinite one, therefore, principle, knowing itself as its infinite love. Therefore, principle, knowing itself as that which integrates everything into the plan of being. Principle that holds everything within the divine plan of being, in the design of being. This is love. The higher sense of love here is not we loving God and God loving us. That's lovey-dovey. It's a human sense of love. God loving me. How on earth can God love me? Except I have a mythological sense of God and man. If I have a mythological sense of God separate from man, I can perceive that there is a God loving me. It's a nice sense. That's not science. It isn't true. It's just not true. God is infinite. How can the infinite love something outside of itself if there is no outside? Can God love something inside? He cannot. He can only be love. And that's that. And that's what we begin to see on this level, that principle is its own infinite love. Principle has that sense that everything in being is completely integrated into the whole. That infinite self-containment of being. That's love. Well, you see, if you are sitting down and know those synonymous terms, can you see how we can sit back for hours and just contemplate one of these enormous statements or of these enormous aspects of being? And you will see that the more and knows about those synonymous terms, the more we can be with ourselves. We don't have to open the book in order to give a treatment, to find a sentence which may be right to give a treatment. The books are closed. And that picture on Christ on Christmas from treating disease, science tells, is closed, not open. And so it's closed, not open. If we open it, we narrow our sense of being. Because if we open it, we read it. And every statement is a limitation of being. Because every statement is only giving a limited sense out of the whole. But if we close it and see and go out from the synonymous term, not up to the synonymous term, and here in science regard the synonymous term in relation to its to the other synonymous terms, principle being its own mind, being its own spirit, then we really are conscious of the infinite one. Being conscious of the infinite one is the highest treatment we can give, because it includes all. All right, that's that. Now, let's go to divine science and see how divine science is meeting different propositions, different questions, different problems. We have seen divine science is now not concerned with the infinite one, but with oneness, therefore with the content of the infinite one, and seeing and realizing and seeing that everything, I don't say now every detail or every part, that everything is the infinite one. Because if I say every part or every detail, which I'm tempted to say in order to express myself, I would split up the infinite into parts. What it is shown is that every manifestation, every idea of being is the idea of the infinite. It is, as we have seen, the all in all. The all capitalized in all. Where every manifestation of being is not a part of being, is not an atom of being, is not just a little dust in the immensity of being, but is being itself. This is the point to which we arrive when we see that spiritual being cannot be split up. Now, the synonymous terms here, which Mrs. Eddy introduces, are life, truth, love, and principle love, as you see on the chart when you go horizontally. She says that life, truth, and love are the realities of divine science. We go out from that point. And that life, truth, and love constitute the triune principle love. So you have the realities of divine science, life, truth, and love, constituting the triune principle love. That's what you have, life, truth, love, principle love, on the chart. This is how she defines divine science. She says that divine science is the acme of what the Bible or the scriptures teach. See, she has seen somehow that the Bible only goes up to the point of divine science, and not to science itself. But that what she brought, what the acme of the textbook is science itself. That's why the textbook had to come after the Bible, because it does not just interpret the Bible in a new way. The textbook jolly well goes a mighty step further than the Bible. And presents science itself. So, here we have what she calls the fourfold unity of being, namely the Word, Christ, Christianity, and science, which constitute really that one divine principle. What does life, truth, and love mean on this level of consciousness? On this level of consciousness, she shows that life is represented by the Father, truth by the Son, and love by the Mother. And that these three persons are forming a triune person called principle love. So in the biblical symbolism, we would find here Father, Son, and Mother as the divine triune person, the person of God. It's quite interesting to see that Mrs. Eddy writes about man and man and man, and man being the Son of God, and so on and so on. All about man and son and man. And only on the last few pages of the textbook, for the very first time, she unites Son with the synonymous term, with God. Very, the only time where she says that life, capitalized, is represented by the Father, truth by the Son. Here, God is Son. So here, God is not only Father and Mother, and its creation, Son. Here on that level, you have God as Father, and God as Son, and God as Mother. And this is very indicative of what we will find in the synonymous terms. So let's take one after the other. When on this level of divine science, of that oneness of being, of that oneness of principle and idea coexistent, she speaks about life, then here she means with life that being is self-existent, is self-existent. We get the sense life characterized here, the place value of life, as self-existence. See, it has nothing to do with that sense of life which is the well of life, the impulsion of life, the creator of life, that which brings forth something. It's the self-existence, because in divine sense, you just keep the tone, just keep what I call the pedal note of divine sense, the tone of oneness, and which therefore says, here life means just one life, therefore established life, self-existent life, ever-present life, and therefore life is here the law of ever-presence. It's the everlasting life. Gives a sense of everlasting, no beginning, no end, Alpha and Omega. It's the beginning and the end. Really, I don't like beginning and end. It's just being, ever-presence, the law of ever-presence, the law of isness. And here, therefore, we get the sense of one life. One life. How often have we said that? How often have we said that wonderful sense that there is one life? And every time when somebody is going to die or is dying, we cry and are sad. Every time. How inconsistent are we and not the textbook? If there is one life, there is one life. Then there is one life. And that there is one life. And that's that. And why are we going to doubt it? Why are we going to doubt it when our two holes in the head see something else? Why are we going to doubt it then? Why are we going to doubt that life, the moment that body doesn't breathe anymore? As if, as long as it breathes, there would be more life in it. Why? If we see that there is one life, then there is one life, and then there is one life. And that's that. And stick to it. There are not many lives to be demonstrated. In divine science, therefore, we are not feeling that we have to take care of many lives, the lives of our patients, the lives of our family, the lives of our soldiers, the lives of this and that. Here we have one life, and therefore that one life is not split up in 3 billion lives. And that 3 billion lives have to be demonstrated to be living. The moment we have divided our sense of the one life into 3 billion lives, we have done something wrong. That's death. It's killing the one life by splitting it up, by atomizing the one into 3 billions. And the only thing we can do, therefore, is not to demonstrate the life of everyone and the life of our patients and the life of our members of the family, but the one life. So that at this point we begin to understand something about the practice of this life. The practice of this life, therefore, is that on that level, now, don't misunderstand me, on that level, I speak now from the level of divine science, on that level we cannot treat individual cases. Because the one life is infinite individuality in the singular. This is as he speaks on that level as infinite individuality, singular. And not as infinite individualities, which is splitting up. So, therefore, here, in practice, we are not feeling that we have to deal with so and so many cases, with so and so many individuals, but that we have to demonstrate one life, the one infinite life. Can you see what the difference it is in our demand? Instead of having to treat a patient, we have to treat our false sense of God. That at that moment, at that stage, really, what we have to deal with, treat with, is that we have individual cases, instead of having one life. And therefore our treatment is one treatment, is seeing the one life and demonstrating the one life. I like that sense which Mrs. Eddy gives in that seventh day of creation, where she speaks somehow that we demonstrate the divine origin. There she doesn't say that we are going to demonstrate this case and that case and over this difficulty and that difficulty, but that demonstration is to demonstrate the divine origin, the one life. When Jesus had to resurrect Lazarus, he didn't demonstrate his resurrection. Mrs. Eddy makes it very clear that what Jesus understood, that life never died. Not that Jesus ever died and that he had to resurrect him, but what he had to demonstrate is the divine origin, namely that the one life just is one life and is life, and that's that. And he had jolly well to lift up his consciousness to that point where he could never conceive of anything else but the one life. So he didn't resurrect Lazarus from his belief of death, but Jesus was seeing that there is one life, and that's that. If Mrs. Eddy said, if he had admitted that Lazarus had died, then he would never have been able to resurrect him. Can you see? Here we have a sense of divine science which does not go out from a negative problem and try to solve it. Here in divine science we go out from God, stay with God, and remain in God, and that's that. Naturally, because divine science incorporates absolute Christian science and incorporates Christian science, it has its effect on the human as resurrection. But the consciousness is that consciousness which does not deal with death. It is that consciousness which demonstrates and makes aware in consciousness why there is only one life, that there is not the life of Jesus, not the life of Lazarus, that there is not my life and your life and the other life to be demonstrated, but just the one life. So this way we begin to see what Mrs. Eddy meant. Did you ever notice that she makes somewhere a very short three-word statement saying, life, capitalized, demonstrates life, capitalized. She didn't say life demonstrates life with a small l. She could say that. But then it would not be on the level of divine science. On the divine science, we demonstrate for one life, and not many lives, and not many concepts of lives. One life. Can you see that if we lift up our thought to see that there is one life, and that when we are faced with a case of somebody departing and going away, that there is nothing within ourselves that is sad, that is depressed, that feels hurt, that feels that we haven't made the grade, nothing like this comes in. Then only one thing reigns in one's consciousness, that the one life is infinite individuality. Infinite. Therefore that one life is going on as the one life in infinite individualized ways. And we just can be happy about it and grateful for it. And I have seen many, many cases that when this occasion has been properly cared for and spiritually really taken care of from that altitude, that never then has come any sense of sadness or loss on the on the ones that were left behind. Somehow we must handle that problem. It's such a pity that Christian scientists try to demonstrate eternal life, life with a small l. Eternal life or a long life of somebody. We shouldn't. We shouldn't say that the Christian scientists should live longer than the other people. Anyway, they don't do anyway. Yes, the statistics show that Christian scientists die in their average earlier than the other people. Yeah. Professor Braden has shown that in his statistics. So, even if they wouldn't, it wouldn't be right. Even if they would, it wouldn't be right. There is no purpose in demonstrating long material life, because it doesn't exist. The only life there is the one life, principle's own life. The question is, are we going to demonstrate that life? That life to which we give free scope of unfoldment, free scope of progression, where we don't hold it back and say, but this person would have still such a nice job to do here and would have to take care of this and this other person which needed it so and so much and so on. It's all rubbish. It's all human. We cannot humanize the divine. Science doesn't work. We only get friction and disappointment. That's all what we get. What we have to see is to stick to our guns. Here the gun is one life. Stick to that. And see that one life has infinite individuality. Therefore that one life jolly well unfolds itself, and therefore will take on new forms of life, new forms of vision, new forms of expression, which surpass in a billion times our human little conception of a little nice human life here on earth. It is just not worth it. Let's expand and see what Mrs. Eddy says, that it says, infinite progression is concrete being. Here we have it. And only infinite progression, infinite individuality, is really being. All the rest of trying to hold life back in a body, in a person, and in years is no good at all. Jesus got rid of all this in 30 years. And certainly demonstrated more life than anybody else. So, this is the practice, as I see it at the moment, of that ever-presence, the law of ever-presence, of the one life. Now I have to stop here, and so I go on tomorrow.